Welcome to Punk Frockers, a community sewing podcast brought to you by Jenny Hassler and Beverly Baptiste.
How are you doing today, Beverly?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm getting ready to get moving. As the day of this recording, I think I'm moving in about 9 days. So, and I have friends visiting for the weekend.
Oh, how exciting. So you've got friends visiting. That's code for helping you move, or?
That means I'm doing nothing this weekend. And in fact, it means I can't pack all my stuff up because they need a place to lay their heads. And I'm going to enjoy this weekend with my friends and not think about the fact that I'm going to have to work my butt off next week to get everything ready.
Well, that sounds marvelous, though. I know you must
be
excited.
It does sound better than your day.
You know, it was a little rough, but we were really fortunate compared to many people with the storm front that came through. We did have some flooding. We had a crawfish on our sidewalk, which is not normal. And that was while there was still 2 or 3 inches of water on the sidewalk and in the front yard area. And of course, it flooded a bit into the house. So we got an opportunity to count how many towels we own and put them all to use. And eventually we even grabbed like a twin size quilt that I had and some other stuff like that just to try and absorb water while it was still an issue. We do have water absorption kits because we're aware that poor planning on the part of my county means that I will occasionally flood into that room. But this was more water than we usually get. We had something like 4.5 inches of rain in a couple of hours, and that's it just isn't supportable. It turns the front yard into a river. So yay.
What have you been working on?
So I have been doing a lot of things. I've been working my way again through some more Vogue patterns that aren't intended to fit me. I made one that's fairly nice. It fits me pretty well. I think it would look ridiculous on anyone who was the correct size for it. It would be incredibly oversized. This one's Vogue 1799. It is not size inclusive. It goes up through a 50-inch hip according to the measurements. But I am sitting here in it in a 62-inch hip, and I think I need to make the next size down. So if it's worn with the ease that the design seems to have built in it, it doesn't look that way on me because that would be incredibly sloppy big. This one's oversized, but it's not. I couldn't wrap two of me in it, which seems to be the general consensus on what you can do on the other sizes if you're their measurement. So I'm going to make an argument that while this one is definitely not within our rules, it could be made by somebody with bigger hips than I have and fit in a way that looks nice, that makes it look like an intentional fit on this dress design. The dress itself is a single panel up the front and then it's got, and the back, and then it's got gathered side panels over the hips, which gives you also the ability to make that potentially wider. And it has a V-neck that's somewhat wide. It goes a little further off on the shoulders than I usually like, but it does cover my bra straps. But on my next one, I'm gonna cut it on the fold like you're supposed to, but I'm gonna move it over so that the fold is an inch past the line on the pattern. So I'm taking basically 2 inches out of the center, 1 inch on either side of the fold, right? Because I think it could use the center piece being a little narrower, and that would help with the shoulder thing as well. I like this one. The other weird thing about it is that it's drafted for a 5'6.5", I think it says on the website. I'm 5'6". It hits the tops of my feet.
Oh,
I'm not 100% clear on what their plan was there. I will also be making my next one a touch shorter. And the one that I did make, I've already removed a few inches off of it just to make it at least not foot length. It's supposed to be a midi length.
I wonder if they made a small pattern and then they hit 25% increase on the copier.
I mean, it definitely feels that way. And this is one where when I made it out of a brushed cotton, sort of a polished looking cotton. And I took it and I ice dyed it with my Rit dyes, which give a much more faded look than the ones that I've just received, the Procyon, that I'm so looking forward to playing with. But I actually like it. It's all blotchy yellow and gray. And I really love it. I like some of the patterning, especially towards my hem, which is a darker gray with orange and yellows. And I like it. I don't love it, but I like it. I'm probably not going to over dye it because I'm satisfied with the look, but I am likely to make this again with some of the linen that I purchased from fabrics-store.com, because I think if I do the adjustment I mentioned, make it a little bit narrower in the centers and then use the Procyon dyes, I think I'm going to be pretty happy with the result.
I think that sounds really good. Now I have a couple of questions for you as usual. So
of course.
You dyed this after you made it, right?
I did.
Okay. Did you use like cotton thread or did?
Nope.
Nope. And so it stays white, right?
It does, but it's light yellow. And so, you know what I mean? It stayed whatever color I did it. And I think I did it in beige. So it's still pretty blendy, but yes, that would have been an issue otherwise.
So have you ever used cotton thread? Because that's an idea for people who want to dye things later, right? Is to use cotton thread, but I've not used it in my sewing machine before.
I don't use cotton thread often. I have a stash of threads that were mine and my mother's when I was younger, and there are some cottons in there, but I don't tend to use them. But I also don't usually intend to dye things after I've made them. Yeah. Mostly my intent would be to dye the fabric and then make, because I think I can control where the patterning on the dye is better that way.
That's a smart point, because you could end up with bullseyes over your...
Yeah, absolutely. The ladies could be bullseyed. It's definitely a thing that could happen. And it's not my ideal situation. You could also end up with weird blotches in your crotch area or anything else that might be displeasing to you. And so, I think you can control it better the other way. But I'm looking forward to it. The dyes that I purchased are ones where you can get pure pigment or you can get ones that are not pure pigment. So like I have a color that's kind of a dark gray, but it's going to be made up of greens and grays and pinks, weirdly. And that's
is that
what
the shiitake one?
It's one of the mushroomy ones. Yes.
And
it's-
Meg from Cooking and Crafting, she used that on one. And I love that. I want to get that shiitake one.
Yeah. And I purchased 6 or 7 of them to play with. And for each one, I'm going to take a square of my linen and put it in when it's being dyed as well so that I can have a swatch piece.
Cool. Yeah.
But I'm really, really excited about that. And then the other one that I'm working on right now is I'm constructing a Kim dress, which is by Stocks Patterns. And that's relevant for this episode because, of course, we're doing an intro for our guest, Lindy from Stocks Patterns. And Lindy had sent me some octopus fabric, which is featured on her website in exchange for some consulting that I did for her. And I love it. And I'm mid seam, or I would take it off the serger and show you, but I'm in the middle of making that dress with a giant screen printed octopus on the front.
Wow.
And
that's
I'm
so cool.
Super excited. I'm very excited by this. And she does have those available for sale on her site and will ship internationally. She's in Germany, but she'll ship outside of Germany. You may have to contact her separately for that, but that's wonderful. I'm really, really enjoying that. And then the last thing that I'm getting ready to do, I've just pulled out my pattern for the Noyce jeans by Munna and Broad, because Munna and Broad sent out their Patreon bonus, and their Patreon bonus includes a beautiful leather label.
Oh, cool.
That you can put on the back of your jeans, which I'd also received when I tested that pattern. And nice. It came with a piece of leather to test sew on to make sure the thread and the needle are all working the way you intend. And when I got it, I thought, oh, well, you know, I've had this brown and tan tiger stripe material that I've been meaning to make jeans out of. And so it seems like the perfect timing for that.
Yeah.
So that's what I've got coming up. Now, I know you would never try anything as utilitarian as jeans, right?
I'm the utilitarian one of the two of us. Yes, I am going to be making some jeans too. Now, I've made a pair of jeans in the past. It's not a size inclusive pattern. So I am looking for size inclusive jeans patterns. Now, I know that the Ames patterns from Cashmerette and the Noyce patterns from Munna and Broad are size inclusive, but their size, both of those start a little bit bigger than me. And so I think it would be hard when I'm learning to fit to start with something.
Right.
I want a pattern that has two size ranges, and I would use the smaller one. Now, the Mountain View jeans from Itch to Stitch fall into that category. They're pull-on jeans, though, and I've told you before, I'm a little bit nervous that they'll be fall-down jeans on me because I don't have much hips to hold them up, but there is elastic right in the waist.
Have you considered the Kelly jeans from Rad Patterns?
Oh, I've never even seen them.
Yeah, those guys go up to an 83-inch hip, but they start at a 32-inch hip.
Fantastic. I'll have to look that up.
They use a zipper, so I have to assume since they use a zipper, maybe they're not pull-on, but
yeah.
Are
they skinny jeans, or what do they look like?
They describe them as slightly relaxed boyfriend-style five-pocket jeans with a tapered leg, oversized pockets, and a tall back yoke.
Oh, okay.
They're made for fabrics with no stretch, so these are true denim.
Okay, I'm going to look at those as well. If other people have some suggestions for us or for me.
I think you should make these. And I think you should make them when I'm making my Noyce jeans, which are also for a fabric that has no stretch.
Uh-huh.
And I'm gonna suggest that I could send you some of my Tiger Stripe fabric for these.
No.
I don't understand.
Jeans take a long time to make.
I mean, it's got a 46-page instruction booklet, so I'm going to go with yeah. And actually, I think my Noyce jeans, when I did them, I spent 3 days making them. I mean, I wasn't working 8 hours a day, but there's a lot of pulling and other stuff with it that it was time consuming and a little achy for my hands.
The thing that takes a long time for me is switching out the top stitching thread all the time.
Well, that's true. That's true. These are cute jeans, though, if you end up deciding you want to try some with a non-stretch fabric.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my other ones are a non-stretch fabric, so I was hoping to get some that were more stretchy, but definitely we'll take a look.
They're cute and they come in different lengths. I'm now looking at them and thinking,
We could both make them.
I've already fitted my Noyce jeans, which is the one argument for them, is I've gone through all the effort of, you know, the stay stitching and the fitting and then the pinching and the pinning and the doing again and all that. So,
yeah. And I've never done that. So I'd like to just have a really nice fitting pair of jeans and find a pattern that really works well for me. Oh, Jenny's showing me the picture and it does look like something I'd like.
Isn't it cute? Especially in the capri level.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you end up doing those, let me know. Maybe I'll buy the pattern too to have some fun.
Okay.
It looks cute.
Yeah. I'm also working on, I made that Selena woven top.
Yeah.
I made it into a dress. So I've made this pattern now 3 times, 2 times as a top and 1 time as a dress. So I'm like acting like Jenny here, making it so many times. But the dress I made it in, this rayon, this textured rayon. Have you ever used the Telio Santa Barbara rayon?
I do not believe I have. Did you like it?
I do like it. I've used it before in something else. I've used it in navy and I've used it in black. And it's a little, it kind of reminds me of like a poly, like a texturized poly, but it's not. It's rayon. So it's not, you know, sweaty or anything. It's not, I don't know. It's probably not the most modern of fabrics, but I do like it. And it has enough weight because that Selena woven top is really floaty. And when I made it into a dress, it's pretty floaty. So that has enough weight to kind of hold it down, but still make it really flowy.
Right.
So I really like how that one came out. And then my next thing that I'm really excited about, which sounds really boring, is these t-shirts I'm making. One of them, the first one that I made, is color blocked. And that one is also got the hashtag of Jenny Fix It For Me because I wasn't sure whether I should have the. So what I wanted to do to color block it is I wanted to make sort of like a yoke in the front and the back, and the sleeves and the neck band and the yokes would all be solid color and the bottom would be print. So I didn't know where that yoke should fall. If it should go, I don't know why I was thinking it should go down like below the armholes.
Right.
But now, like once you said, no, I'd do it higher. then I realized, oh yeah, it would look weird maybe down lower.
It looked different. I mean, it's a perfectly fine look. It would just be very different to what I think you meant.
I think if I wanted to do it lower, I should do it in a shape, you know, like a V or even a wavy thing or something, but it should be something other than a straight across.
I can totally see that. That would be neat.
And then today I made the same pattern, which I'll get to in just a second, in some more fabric. I bought this fabric from StyleMaker Fabrics. And this is going to be my new t-shirt fabric. It is made with, it's a cotton and modal jersey knit, and it has just enough weight to it. It's not a heavy weight, so it's drapey, but it's not thin and flimsy. I love it. So that's just a black t-shirt, but I absolutely love it. And the pattern that I'm using is the Toronto Tee by Rebecca Page, and it's free. And
that's
so,
a good price.
Yeah. And I've done a few different things with it. But for me, I like it. I like to add about an inch to the length, but I'm tall. But it is so nice, and it has plenty of ease in it, but it's not sloppy. It's just the perfect t-shirt pattern for me. So if you're looking for something that's like, I don't like when knits are form fitting to me, that's the only kind of negative thing for me with the Concord tee from Cashmerette. That it just is a little tight. And I mean, that's the way it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be form fitting. And I guess I prefer when I'm wearing a t-shirt for it to be just real relaxed.
So you've had a lot going on. I do like the color blocking. Were you really satisfied with it? Did you hit the right spot?
Yes, I think I did hit the right spot, and I like it. I think that pattern for a t-shirt would have been too much on its own. It would have been just distracting on its own. I don't think it would have been great as a t-shirt by itself, but I love it. And it with the color blocking, it looks nice enough. I wore it with my estuary skirt and I thought it looked really nice. So
that color blocking that high up, the way you've done it with this dark, dark color and the pattern is the one that caused my husband to declare my outfit cute, but off-putting.
Oh, I should use that hashtag.
Yeah. That's where that comes from. Is I wore a dress and I asked him how it looked, and he's like, it's cute. And I made him expand on that. I'm like, what do you mean it's cute? You sound super hesitant. He goes, well, it's cute, but off-putting. I'm like, okay. So, and it was a black yoke that was a high yoke with a really, I mean, for me, it was a bright orange with dancing zebras on it fabric gets the rest of the dress, and a hashtag was born. So
yeah, I think that was the perfect height to put it.
I think it is. I think it's a really neat look. I think it looks great. So awesome.
I really want to see what you do with these ice dyeing. I want to do it too as soon as I've got my house all moved in.
Yeah, I think that's great. I did, like I think I mentioned to you, it just did arrive. It was washed away by the storm, but they plastic bagged their fabrics, so it was safe. I got a bunch of 2.5 yard cuts.
Yeah.
And my intent was to dye at least one of those for you and see if you would actually make something out of it.
I would.
So hopefully one of the ones that I dye will come out in colors that you do not hate.
I don't hate colors, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think I could stretch that if I don't think I got any like hot pink or whatever, but I expect there's ways I could make that unappealing. But I thought it would be a lot of fun. And it's that L019 or whatever, the one that you like, that weight.
Yeah. So that sounds great. What are we doing talking today? What are we here for?
We are here to introduce our episode with Lindy from Stocks Patterns. We had Lindy on to speak with us about a variety of things. Obviously, part of it was how her business has been established and how it's going, where she learned to sew, what her design philosophy is, how she functions as a business person, but also to talk about things like how to consider adjustments you may want to make to patterns or adaptions in order to have them usable in more accessible ways.
Yeah. We also talked about a few things we weren't expecting to talk about, like draping fabrics and
how
you know, she works with by draping. Mm-hmm. I think that's really cool. And we talked about a few of our favorite patterns that she has.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've made, at this point now, I've made both the hacker dress, which is one that has a hood, and it's super cute. I am going to make more of those this winter because I think I think being able to cover my ears and my head and keep it warm will be a real good benefit, as well as the Kim dress, which I am in the middle of finishing up right now.
I'd like to make the gossamer dress that she has, which is a raglan sleeve, but V-neck, which I just haven't seen in, with other, or shawl neck or something, you know, sort of,
yeah.
I don't know what you call that, but that looks like a really cool pattern. So
she also has two patterns that are designed like a traditional button-up long-sleeved pattern with a collar, at least one of which comes into more size-inclusive sizing and has a unique construction in that the back is done from a knit fabric and the fronts and sleeves are done out of the woven fabric, which offers it perhaps a little bit more comfort and definitely the ability to be a little bit more size inclusive, having that stretch back. That's something I'm interested in making something for my husband because he doesn't care for a button down, but there are occasions where it's really useful. And I think that feature would make it more wearable.
Yeah. I think that our listeners are going to really enjoy our talk with Lindy. It was nice to be able to talk to her all the way over in Germany.
Yeah, it really was. It was a great conversation. I very much enjoyed it. So hopefully everybody else will too. Be sure and leave comments for us and reach out to Lindy if you have any additional questions for her as well. And of course, finally, remember to rate and review us. 5 stars only. Complaints can come by DM.
Hey, Jenny, how are you?
Oh, I'm super duper. How about you, Beverly?
I'm great. I'm so happy to have our guest here today from Stocks Patterns. So can you introduce yourself to our listeners, please?
Hello. My name is Melinda Stokes, but most of you know me as Lindy. And I have a pattern called Stocks Patterns. And it's called Stocks Patterns because my last name is Stokes. And people in Germany can't pronounce it. So it's sort of like Stockers or the Storks or Steaks. Yeah, anyway, so S-T-O-K-X. And so my Instagram is Stocks Patterns, and the website is www.stokx-patterns.com.
Okay, so Lindy, how did you learn to sew?
Well, I learned to sew because my mother, well, I watched my mother sew. When I was a kid, she'd sew together beautiful things for us to wear, but also crawl around the floor and cut out our school uniforms and sew them together. And I think that one of the things that always used to get me was she'd never do it as I wanted her to do it, you know? Bit shorter, Mum, you know, not like that. No, you can't do that. And anyway, I eventually learned to sew when I was a teenager. And I learned to sew by hand first, but then I learned to sew as a teenager. And oh. I've been doing it ever since, really.
So did you end up going to fashion school? Is that how you learned to be a designer? Or?
Well, I did a certificate in dress design, and I started it when I was 17, and I was finished before I was 20. But it was a good school because we did drawing and pattern making. One of the best classes I had was a draping class because one of the ladies was a couturier. So she'd have the dummy there and just show us how to drape material with pins and then to take the shape and to record it and then put the shape flat. And I think the whole thing about pattern making is being able to have a shape and then with the notches and directions and everything else to be able to recreate it.
Yeah.
So, and I think that I still do that. That's the bottom line of how I make patterns.
So you still do draping and then make it. Yeah. Okay.
Very much. Yes. I'm, and I think in that way it really goes in as well.
That's wonderful. I don't know how many pattern designers do that direction. I guess we've not asked that many people.
Yeah, I guess it's like the computer is a tool. But, of course, with tools, there are going to be restrictions and there are also going to be advantages.
Right.
I've got my basic shape. And this is also how I learned how to make things for different sizes as well, because I always start with some kind of pattern and I take measurements, vertical measurements and horizontal measurements, and just recreate it from a shape that I know fits. So it's a fairly roundabout way to do things, but it works for me.
Yeah.
You make it sound so simple, but my experience for me has been that it isn't that simple to go from draped to a flat pattern or
Jenny, you know, I have got a bit of a fantasy of something I'd like to do with you. And I take that the right way, please. I sometimes have pattern students come in and I don't know what's happened to them, whether they've had their fingers hit with a ruler or, but sometimes I'll start them with a booty. So I say, okay, here's your foot. Let's wrap it up in paper and gaffer tape or whatever. Put your floor on the ground and then we draw around it. And then you've got to get the gaffer tape off your foot. I mean, of course, you've got something underneath it to stop it sticking to your leg. But then by drawing lines on your foot, and then the idea is that you want to be able to reconstruct it. So I'm happy to do a video with you about this. We can even do a virtual. It could be hilarious.
What's so interesting to me about that is it's, I guess, the simple way in is what you're selling this as. And it sounds completely complicated to me, but my mother is disabled and she has significant swelling in her feet. Mm. And one of the things I threaten to do every year is to wrap them in fleece and tape it onto her feet, which is not as nice as, for example, creating a fitted sock that actually worked on her foot, or even being able to stitch that to a bottom that she could use to walk in a hallway without falling down. So this actually sounds super useful to me. And it's something I've thought about, but not really made the commitment to do. I would be in favor of this.
The cool thing about that is then we've got a model as well. Then we don't have to actually put our own foot up here then.
I am 100% sure my mother would not permit her feet to be anywhere on the internet, but I am like so positive, but.
Well, Jim would let us.
Okay, then we've got Jim. All right.
And yeah, Jim is definitely, Jim is a trooper. And in addition to that, Beverly, I have to tell you, I don't know whose feet were whose when you showed your mani-pedis off.
He will be very pleased to hear that you don't know whose are whose.
Okay, great. I even zoomed to look at the legs and I'm like, am I spotting anything that gives me clues? And I had no idea. Anyway, sorry for that tangent.
No, not at all. I think that I guess that's the beautiful thing about bodies, that we've all got one and they're all amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I love that idea. And my mom is probably one of the biggest reasons why I'm interested in accessibility in design for clothing. I have not made much for her. She is a clothing horse and she's very particular about what she wants. And she's found like three shirts she just buys in every color, three pants she buys in every color times two, just in case something spills. But she's forever asking for things, and I haven't always felt comfortable making things that I think would work well for the way her body functions. So, yeah.
The thing is that I've been devoting some thought to specifically designing for disability. Yeah, like everyone, I went to the internet, and I found out that 15% of people have a disability. And, of course, that can go from minor to, you know, serious. It can go from something you can see to something you can't see. And then I came down to it and I thought, well, you design for disability the same way you design for anything else, which is to ask a lot of questions and to find out what's important to the person. And also the problem with the design process is someone will come up and then they'll give you the solution before they've given you the whole problem. And I find that this can be a bit of a problem. And I've got started to be a little bit of to realize in this kind of situation that I have to be the boss and say, look, please excuse me, let's get back and tell me what do you need. And then the thing I put on top of that is that that person needs to be seen and they need to be comfortable. And the other thing I think is very important is they have to be safe. For me, it's just a logic. And I'm just getting inside that person's head, the same way that I suppose architects talk to you if they're designing your house. They're sort of like, well, how many kids do you have? What do you like to do? Do you like to gather around the fire? Do you cook together? You know, it's so personal. Well, let me give you another example. It's not a disability, but I've got a commission at the moment. I'm making some trapeze costumes for my neighbours. So they're clowns. And he swings on the trapeze and he's dressed up like he's got a pair of trousers on and a waistcoat and a normal shirt. And she's got a cute little jacket on and cute little skirt and sweet little shoes and a little handbag. But when they're on the trapeze, they climb ladders. And at one stage, he takes his trousers, he throws them over the trapeze, and they both swing from the trousers backwards and forwards. So that means inside the trousers, I've sewn a long tape that's strong enough to support both of them. And I've also created a sleeve so that the lady can put her arm right above her head. And the funny thing about that, I'm desperate to put this on my pattern project, but I just haven't got around to it yet. It's called the circus blouse. And so to put in a lot of movement underneath the arm doesn't help you if you can't get this measurement from the front of the sleeve to the back of the sleeve. Gets much longer than it is when your arm's just in its normal position. So if your arm's raised, you need much more fabric to get from the front armhole to the back armhole. So I eventually ended up creating a puff sleeve. And the thing is, I created it from first principles, and I thought, yeah, of course, it's been around for generations. If you want to have a sleeve you can move in, it has to be a puff sleeve. So it's so I reinvented the kind of classic ladies' dirndl from first principles.
One of the questions I have for you is, when we talk about designing patterns for specific disabilities, it would be hard to put all that in one pattern. How do you do this? Do you try to accommodate lots of people, or if someone contacts you, you make an adaptation for them?
Well, I guess that the patterns are fairly flexible. I mean, insofar as, well, let's start with sizing, because I wouldn't say that I have, I'd say that I have a clothing range that is accessible, and that's very important to me. There are pockets in a lot of them, and so if someone's got a diabetic pump or something, I can make a little hole inside the pocket so that they can put the pump in the pocket and then put the part that regulates how much insulin they need straight into their body. To explore this theme further would be fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a book right there. How fantastic to just be able to say, okay, if you're in this situation, you can do this, this, and this.
Yeah.
I'd love to do that.
You know, that's really interesting, because we had a discussion with someone recently about aging and size issues. I don't know if you heard that interview, but they were talking about how there's not really a fit book for aging and being fat, let's say, and how that would be a really welcome book. And it seems like there should be a fit book also for different types of disabilities. Like that would be
That'd be a really great thing to do.
I think as well, just making more, even more tutorials or conversations about how basic parts of garments can be adapted for different needs. The insulin pump is one that I'm a little familiar with. I've done a few adjustments on ready-to-wear clothing for people I know who had a pump, but it's one of those things that it would be relatively easy to add to many garments, and yet folks may not think about it and may not consider shape, size, type of material, where the entrance ought to go, et cetera, related to those. And while there are a wide variety of different types of pumps and pumps controls, the pouch itself doesn't adjust that much.
Mm. Yeah. And there's also other things, like with people with disability, sometimes they're much better to have things like poppers down the fronts of their shirts rather than buttons. Just because they're much easier to get on and off. If you've got difficulty with your hands, then you don't want to have a zip that you have to mess around with. Some of those two-way zippers, instead, poppers are much more comfortable.
Jenny doesn't ever put the zippers in anyways.
But when I look at things for my mom, for example, she gets cold, which is, I think, not too uncommon for older folks. She's 80, or as I tell her, she looks great for 90. But she, when you want to put something over her shoulders, something that snaps doesn't work well for her. She doesn't have the dexterity for that. And so it's got to be something that either wraps sufficiently, that it's unneeding of anything like that, or something that might have an easy tie or a piece of elastic that could stretch. That sort of a thing is stuff that I've had to look at for her. In addition, she's got an arm that doesn't lift much more than this. So getting anything on and off when you're sitting here with an arm that only lifts to your shoulder is really different. And I don't feel knowledgeable enough when I go out and find a pattern on what I can do to make that work better for her. And even, I mean, I've got a long list. Even simple things like she uses a wheelchair, and determining skirt length for someone in a wheelchair feels complicated to me. And in addition, if it's someone in a wheelchair that you can't really access during the sewing process, so you've got a limited amount of access. And even if I were to bring her a skirt that was partly made, probably she would not be able to change into it while I was there. Mm. And it would have to be something that I could look at again the next time I went. So it becomes a really slow process as well. But it just feels complicated to me to try and figure out how to make things that make those changes. Do you have a specific process you walk through as you're looking at that?
My first thing would be tape measure. That would be the very first thing I'd do. Even if she's sitting down, you can still measure from her waist over her knee down to the length of her skirt. And
that's,
I'd also
true,
measure the side. The other thing that's important with wheelchair users is that where they're sitting, that it's completely flat, that there's nothing there, that so no zippers, no buttons, nothing. Mm-hmm. That, because sometimes below the waist there's no feeling, and that can be very dangerous for somebody that is sitting on something that they can't feel is hurting them.
That's a good point. That's one I happen to know, but it is one that I don't know whether it would have occurred to me. I'm fortunate that I don't believe in zippers. So, but
that's good.
But it is relevant. If I were to do a skirt that was pleated, I'd be concerned potentially about the thickness of the pleats or how they might fall under her bum as she sits in the chair all day, for example, or most of the day for her, and so forth. So it's all quite interesting to me. What made you interested in looking at ways to adapt clothing for differently abled persons?
It's a puzzle for me. I guess I'm a bit of a geek like that. As a designer, I'm not really interested in doing things that are the same as how everybody else does them. I'm always looking for something a bit new.
I think that's something that I know Beverly doesn't. I binge sew. I make one thing. I'd probably make it 30 times.
Yeah.
Beverly is less of a binge sewer because she's interested in that next new thing, which isn't the same as designing it, but I think it's a similar impulse. It's how patterns are sold as people are looking for that next interesting thing. I think you're interested in it, which is what is interesting to me.
Yeah.
Because a lot of designers have that interest that you can see visibly anyway.
Yeah. I mean, there's, for example, a lot of really nice traditions here, probably in the US as well, like with a chef's jacket. A classic chef's jacket has round buttons. Like they've got little round buttons, and then they've got a stand. And then the front of the chef's jacket has got double buttonholes. So you put in through this round button. And the reason for that is that then you can rip off the jacket rapidly if it's on fire or covered with sauce or something like that. But the other thing.
Oh my gosh, that's such a variety of problems, though.
Yeah, and it's a really good problem. I mean, just as I was saying with the puff sleeve, I mean, it stood this test of time because it's a really good solution.
Yeah. And, oh my goodness.
But then you can also button it the other way around because there are buttons, holes on both sides, so you can cross it back over. So if you have to go into the restaurant, you can put the clean side to the front. You didn't know that yet?
No, I didn't.
No, and I worked in restaurants for a long time.
Yeah?
I have a daughter who's actually a trained chef, and I had no idea. So,
well, I don't know whether
that's... She's not working as a chef any longer, but she had innumerable chef jackets. I had no idea.
Yeah, it'd be worth having a look at them. I actually was asked to design some chef stuff a while ago. The lady who was directly above me, because I was doing this as a freelancer, was had handed me designs where they had zips that just came to sort of mid-chest as designs. You can't do this. It's dangerous, you know. Yeah, anyway, I didn't last there very long. And also if you're a carpenter in Germany, they've got corduroy trousers and they're flared at the bottom. So then the sawdust doesn't come into your shoes.
Ah. Oh, very good. Do you do the whole process yourself, or do you hire people who do grading for you, or like do you do the entire thing yourself?
Well, I'm a pattern cutter first, and I also, when I pattern cut, I'm also looking for new techniques. So I'll make the shape and I'll probably make three or four before I'm close to liking it. Some of my designs, like the hacker, Jenny knows, it's a funny hooded thing. I designed that in about half an hour from beginning to end. But other things can kick around my studio for 6 months, tweaking them here and there.
That particular one, the hooded dress, is one that I will end up making this fall, because if my feet are warm and my ears are warm, I'm warm. So I could make it sleeveless, and as long as it covered my ears, I'd be good in the snow. So
that makes me very happy.
I love that, and it doesn't end up looking like I'm wearing a hoodie at the office. It looks like a dress.
Oh, it looks really cool on you. I like it very much.
Yeah. So,
but getting back to Beverly's question, so I'll keep messing around because I'm looking for the quickest way to make things as well, because I think that there's a story, and this is a very odd story, but I'm going to tell you. One of my customers is a design professor, and I've known him for years. And he's a really, really sweet man. He came in. I said, well, you know, yeah, what do you do? And he says, well, I write about design theory. I said, well, you know, can you give me an example? He said, well, I'm writing a story about lungfish, and they started to come out the water, and they used their flippers in the water to move forward. But when they came up onto the land, they still used their flippers to move. And by this, he was suggesting that we learn one way to do things and that we just keep solving problems the same way. We're not looking for new ways to solve the problems. Mm-hmm. And I think that in the rag trade, there's quite a bit of scope to look at new materials or to look at new ways to design problems or to solve problems, I should say. I think that's one of the things I'm trying to shake up. Like in some of my designs, I have cut the back of a shirt diagonally because then I can use the diagonal so that you can move your arms to the front and to the back and even up like this. Of course, when you do that, you've got to be aware of how the diagonal works. Like it has a different fold language than the straight grain. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the problems I have are with communication and getting in there and not being in my own little bubble and, you know, spitting out those things that I happen to know and making them accessible, because for me they're really clear. But on the other hand, I wanted to put up my patterns many years ago, and a friend of mine is a clever influencer, and she was actually the reason I've got my patterns online. She came to my studio many years ago and said, Lindy, why don't you have anything for plus-size people? And I said, then I made her something, and she said, why is it blue? I wanted a green one. And I said to her, why don't you make it yourself? I mean, she's got a different version of this story, but I'm here, I'm telling my version. And so at the time I was working with digital pattern makers, so I had my pattern and I had them printed out in my friend Micah's size. And she went off and made it, and then other people wanted them as well. And then she had the idea to launch the patterns under her label, Craftland. Micah's still got some of my patterns on her site with my blessing. And she is more focused now on perfecting fit and showing people how to alter patterns so that they fit better. So we've got a nice little thing happening there. She also does a really nice podcast. Anyway, so Micah put my patterns up on her website. And then I started to see how people were making my patterns, and they were using different colored cloth. And I found it really exciting. Sort of, I made something called the party rock. And then suddenly, instead of in my sort of sensible industrial fabric, you know, people were making all kinds of stuff. It just blew my mind. And I just loved it. And so I was sort of on Micah's case, hey, can we put more patterns up? She was like, oh, it's so difficult with all the testers and this and this and this. Anyway, eventually I said, that's how Stocks Patterns came to be. But it took me about a year before I was actually even getting online. Like I couldn't actually zip a pattern. I couldn't zip a file. So it's been a very steep learning curve for me. Yeah, to get back to your question, I've got a lady who's a clothing engineer. I give her the pattern when I've nutted it out completely. And then I go and control freak her and say, yes, I'd like it to grow more in the front than it does in the back, because they've got something here called an X component. So you can put in your own growth points. So Astrid does the patterns and my colleague Noria does the illustrations, and we talk about the instructions and how they're going to go together. And then there's another lady that puts all of the patterns onto the form that can be then printed out by the end customer. I haven't actually met her in person this year because she's been in lockdown for a year. So I've been instructing her in my perfect German, but we're getting there. One of the things my friend Micah said to me was, you know, if she was going to do the patterns again, she wouldn't do them in an A4 format. And so I thought about that and I thought, well, there are some people that want to just print out the patterns and get to them immediately. And that's when I had the idea of, rather than formatting each piece, which can be really expensive if you're not able to do it yourself, I thought, well, I'll put them all on a grid. And that's, I don't know whether you know this, Beverly, Jenny does. So I've got behind all of my patterns 10 centimeter by 10 centimeter, like a checkerboard. Mm. And in each square, there's a letter and a number. So that even if those pieces came out of the computer and scattered randomly on the floor, you'd still be able to figure out which way up it was and how each piece related to the next.
That's so helpful.
The other thing is you can put it on different size paper, so American letter paper, mm-hmm. or you can print it out on even a bigger piece of paper like A3 if you've got access to that. So it works on any size paper.
So do you also have A0?
I do have A0, but it's more of a default.
Oh, okay.
So the patterns are already an original size. So, and they're 90 centimeters wide. So the best way to do it is to have them printed out on a 90 centimeter wide plotter. In the perfect world, I'd have someone in the States lined up who has a 90 centimeter wide platter. So if you're there, folks, get in touch because the A0 means that I could format the whole pattern again, then just for A0. But then I'd really have to go and bang my head against the wall.
I see.
So because the other thing I would really like to do would be to have the patterns available for projectors. But I think that's a number too hard at the moment because step by step, because it's just me.
Right.
Yeah.
One thing I really love about your patterns on your website is that for each pattern, you have a picture of a model in the pattern, in the made up pattern. And then you also have the line drawing. Mm. I appreciate that so much because everyone does styling differently. But when you sew a lot of things, you're very accustomed to looking at line drawings. So when I see, my eye will be caught by the picture of the person in the item. But when I look at the line drawing, I see the potential of the pattern. And in most pattern companies, you have to click on that first, the pattern, then go and several slides later to find that. I also find it very helpful that when you do click on the patterns, you can get all the size information within a few slides. You can see that quite easily where you would go. One of the other things I found really nice is I noticed that there's a pattern in there that I would like to make for Jim. And what I find is especially with the big four companies, that patterns that someone might want to make for someone who was a non-femme person would be am I doing that right, Jenny?
you're doing just fine. if you're making what would be traditionally a men's shirt or someone for a masculine presenting person.
Yes, that those sizes, Jim is not a huge person at all, but he is generally in the largest or second to largest size. But when I looked at your size chart for the Tino shirt, Jim is about the middle. I think that's wonderful. If anybody's looking for that type of garment, they should definitely check your site out, because that, I mean, that opens it up to a lot more people.
I can't remember if I mentioned it to you or not, but when I was looking at the button-down shirts, at least one of them is one that can be made with a knit back, which also adds some wearability or some flexibility for all kinds of bodies and all kinds of issues, but particularly for someone like my husband, who's plus-sized, and dress shirts often don't fit or stretch right when he moves around in them. So the ability to make a solid white shirt with a white fine knit back, really cool. So,
thank you for saying that. And I really love that pattern. And in fact, I'm desperate to make a different back for it as well, because I find the main difference between male presenting bodies and female presenting bodies is the back length. Huh. So, because I call it like a swimmer's back is what you find in a lot of male presenting people. So that's what makes the back length so much longer. So if I was able to have like a flat back for that.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Now, as I recall, you also sell your designs sewn up.
Yes. Oh, yes. Now, Jenny, that's a really good point. It's been a really rough bricks and mortar shop, and being nearly a year just alone in my shop. And I think without the pattern project, I would have gone completely nuts. It's been so wonderful just to have that import and to see people just coming up like this, kind of like whack, whack, fantastic, different things popping up. I've thought really seriously, and I've thought, have I actually told myself that I'm thinking of shutting the shop or not? Because if it goes for another year, I can really forget it. Also because the shopping patterns of people have changed. I think maybe people have realized that they don't need as much stuff. And these are all things I can relate to completely. I want to be able to offer things. And I've been flirting with the idea of selling patterns, finding connections to cloth, and also finding connections with makers, so that there is a way to have the end user have the garment they want without the ability to sew, is able to get what they want from a person who is paid a good wage, because that's the main problem with the rag trade. It's just not seen as a job. It's everyone's grandmother does it, and it's really hard to get a decent fair wage, or even to have people understand that there are jobs like clothing engineer.
Jenny, what patterns have you made from Lindy's company?
I believe that I've only made the hacker so far. Okay. I have the big pants here, and every time I go to cut them out, I realize I have to get on the floor because my table, which is very large, is not the right size. And it's the floor part that slows me the heck down, which is a shame, because I view the big pants as the equivalent of what my grandfather brought me back from Turkey and called Turkish peasant pants, and MC Hammer wore, and they called them whatever they called those, hammer pants. I don't even know. Yeah. I wore these for my entire first 4-year degree from college, and I love them so much, and I am so desperate, but apparently not desperate enough to get on the floor as yet. Now, part of this is that I have a 900 square foot house, and I don't have a lot of open floor space.
Yeah.
But part of it is just that I feel older than wants to be crawling around on my floor. So what I have to do is trick one of my children into cutting the pattern out for me. Now, you'd say to yourself, this has got to be easy, right? Because I do stuff for them all the time. They owe me. they don't feel about it that way. So yeah, they're on my list, but I haven't got to it yet just because I don't want to crawl on the floor. But we're doing a big household decluttering and getting rid of things. My husband is, I am, all this stuff, because we have this new crazy plan to retire to the beaches in Mexico in 15 years. So obviously we're going to get rid of all our stuff now. And as we do that, I should have more floor space and then it will happen.
Yeah, there's I used to have a big piece of wood that I would put on top of my bed if I was cutting out big things. And so I just like pile it on the bed. But I guess that's not really a solution, is it?
It's a little rough here because of the layout of my building. But it's I actually have three different patterns from three different pattern designers that are in the when I want to be on the floor pile. Because my theory is when I get down there, I am not coming up until they've all been cut out. Because at least there's that. And I understand exactly how lame I sound, but it's just true.
Well, a pattern that I saw today that I had not seen before is the gossamer dress on your, and I need to make that. So what I like is that I like the idea of raglan sleeves, but a lot of times things with raglan sleeves have this really high neckline that I don't like. And what I like is there's this nice kind of like the V-neck on that gossamer dress. And then it looks like, you know, the way the panels come together in the back, I'm just really intrigued by that dress. And I think that I could make that and wear it all winter with tights. It just really looks like a tights and boots kind of dress for me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's that gossamer dress works on a very hot day, but it also works in winter. I also found it quite funny. I made it initially to primitive pleat that you just screw it up, because I thought if it's a summer dress, the last thing you want to be doing is ironing. Wow. So that's another thing that you can do with that.
Okay. Yeah. So that would be very helpful to Jenny, who does not like to iron at all. Like,
yeah, yeah. That sort of fits right up there in PF anarchy.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
I've got a nice video. I'd like to find it and send it to you because it's got a nice Buster Keaton kind of soundtrack to it. And I actually did a video called Accepting Chaos, the collar, to go with the gossamer dress. So where to actually put those videos is something I'm also trying to figure out.
Well, send that along and we'll put a link in the show notes for this.
Oh, that'd be sweet. Okay. So people that's Accepting Chaos. I think that fits right up there with PFA.
Oh, my goodness.
That's a theme dear to my heart.
Yeah.
So beautifully. Okay, I have one other thing I have to ask you about on this call, just because I love your printed octopus so much.
Ah, and thank you.
That is fabric that you sell that's screen printed, I think, by a third party, by someone else, but is so completely beautiful. And I know you've put some thought into where it's positioned on the fabric so it can be used in a variety of different ways. And it is the best octopus.
The funny thing about the octopus is that I was, it was the dark times last year. And I thought I really have to do something completely stupid. I just was desperate for, like, I don't know, beach or something like this. Then I saw just on social media an octopus, and it was from a poster printing company in Berlin. It's an old octopus. It's I think it's online. You can find it. Anyway, they sent me a high-res version, and I moved from my old space into my new space. But in my old space, some screen printers moved in. And so they're the ones. So I went to Dylan and I said, hey, can you print this octopus? He said, yeah, sure. And so we started to put octopuses on things. And I just wanted to just dress my whole street. I wanted to put umbrellas and, I don't know, some kind of beach, just because
I need it on the butt of some underwear. I think it's perfect for underwear.
Yeah, it was just serious escapism for me. And then eventually just someone said, hey, are you selling that octopus material? And it hadn't really occurred to me. So I asked Dylan, he said, yeah, sure. And so then I put up a quick thing on Instagram, and suddenly I think about over 20 people were interested in having an octopus. And I think I might have mentioned to you that I'm actually a bit dyslexic. Sorting out lots of orders and putting them in how much, which colour and which country and how many metres did sort of do my head in. But I've sort of managed now to put it up on the website. I'm going to do this every few weeks, just do a print run if people want an octopus, because it would also be up for an octopus being printed in the US, because for me, it represents working together and finding a way to new ways to do things and reaching out and multitasking, all of those things, and also just being such a beautiful, stupid thing. Yeah, I'm really glad you like it. Yeah, there's something I wanted to tell you. In the deep past, one of the oddest things I've ever made was when I was working for a theatre company and I had to make an octopus, and he was called Nautisopheles. He was completely covered in sequins, and it was foam rubber. I covered him in navy lycra and stitched gold embroidery all over him, and he had six kind of sheaths, and inside the sheaths there was the kind of soft part of the Velcro, because and I also made these legs. So the octopus had six detachable legs and the two legs that were the actor who was inside it, because the octopus had his legs pulled off every night as part of the water baby opera. So
that
anyway,
is amazing. Where is that pattern? Oh my goodness. That's
amazing. Maybe I can write a blog post of how to adapt anything to make it a kind of detachable octopus.
Your shop has fabrics as well. Where do you ship your fabrics, since we have listeners from sort of all over the world?
I mean, initially I thought I would only ship them within Europe because I didn't see why anyone would want them from the US, because I mean, you guys seem to have some fantastic facilities there. The octopus I'm happy to ship, and anything else I'm happy to ship as well, to tell you the truth. And the fabrics got put up on my website just because it was under my table. So that wasn't really a plan. It's like one of those things that just happened.
I see.
Yeah. So one of the reasons that I started to call myself a product designer rather than a dress designer was when I first got to Berlin, I was not making clothes. I thought, I'm only going to make bags. And then somebody challenged me to make a new product. So I invented something called a pocket bag or pocket belt. I mean, now you see them everywhere, but in the early 90s, I went and found someone in Poland who could produce them. Like, I just went there on a train. This is before the internet, before credit cards, and just was walking up and down the street listening to sewing machine sounds. And I found a factory, and that's a whole other story. But I was making pocket belts, and then I started to make aprons. I was trying to make things that fit everybody. So I kept them. I kept the back of the aprons open. I kept the pocket belts very adjustable. And then one day I made some skirts that were also very adjustable. And then one day the wrong fabric arrived, and it was raincoat material. And that sent me down a rabbit hole. So now I actually have 13 sizes for women and 10 sizes for men. And I have only a small shop, and I've got probably 150 patterns in my cellar. So It's the beginning. I'm not sure where it's going. I'd love to talk to you guys anytime. Yeah. I mean, I feel much better as part of the making community than I do as part of the rag trade. I mean, I really feel I found my people. It's, it's great. I really enjoy it.
Well, that's great. I really enjoyed getting to know you over the last couple of months.
Bless you.
I like watching what you do. I like the way that you think. So I'm excited that you're starting to see foot traffic again. And I'm hopeful that things will go really well for the shop in the coming year. And hopefully for the pandemic, it will go away and we will start to see more success in the world. That'll be great.
Well, it certainly unlocked a whole lot of interesting possibilities. I mean, I do realize that my communication skills have to be honed. By honed, I mean really whacked into shape. And that's really exciting for me as well, because there's so much I actually want to share. So let's see how we go with that.
See you next Tuesday.
Punk Frockers is created, produced, and edited by Beverly Baptiste and Jenny Hassler. On Instagram, you can find the podcast at Punk Frockers. You can find Jenny at J.O. Hassler and Beverly at Weeds to Wildflowers. Our artwork and music is created and performed by Jim Durand. You can find him on Instagram and his website at jimdurand.art.